the hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Thank you very much. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Finally on the air, this is Internet Radio. I'm your Internet Radio talk show host, and this is my show. Thank you for being here. Oh, excuse me. Something got caught in my throat. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for podcasting. Thank you for downloading and all that old good stuff. Okay. All right, my guest today is Laura Hallman and her book, Unlocking Parental Intelligence. Okay, we're going to be waiting for her. And I apologize for everything yesterday and on yesterday's show. It turned out to be a pretty good show yesterday. I listened to it. It was pretty good, you know. I hardly ever give a bad show. And it's a shame if you miss it. All right, let's get on. Let's get on. What we got? Ben Carson is in the news. I mean, he's all over the place. Presidential candidate, Republican presidential candidate, Ben Carson is all over the place, and they are spotlighting. Why? Because they are spotlighting his lies, as if they just found out that this guy tells a bunch of fibs. We've known it forever. A lot of us have known it forever since we've been watching this guy that he was a liar. And now he's lying about lying. he has a double-digit lead in North Carolina over the rest of the 2016 GOP presidential field candidates. A new poll finds he has a double-digit lead. But I think by him fabricating so much, even about his time in school, you know, I mean, just about everything, if he's not fabricating his background, he is just flat out don't know what he's talking about when it comes to issues pertaining to America, as he is seeking the highest office in the land, which is president of the United States. And he doesn't know how to answer questions. He wants to answer questions like so many others in the GOP field. He wants to answer questions the way he wants to answer them and when he wants to answer them and how he wants to answer them, instead of answering the questions the way the American people would like to see a candidate for president of the United States who is asking for their votes to answer a question. So this guy is something else. The media act as if they're just finding out about this guy's lies. And I'm pretty sure they have not. But the only reason why they are investigating his background, because he is the front runner. Cases in some states and some places around the U.S., he is way out in front of Donald Trump. Okay, Carson takes 31% of support from the Republican-leaning voters in the state, according to the survey. I'm not going to mention it on this show, you know. This gives him a 12-point lead over his closest competition, which is Donald Trump, who is at 19%. Yeah, so we have to look at that further. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. I'm broadcasting out of Chicago, as always, and it's beautiful. It's dark because of daylight savings times. It gets a little bit darker all over the U.S. And right now I'm hearing that there's a lot of protesters downtown Chicago, a lot of students. They're out of school, obviously, and they're the lawmakers in Illinois about not having a budget. Because if there's no budget, hey, there's going to be a school. There's going to be a strike. School's going to be closing. School is going to be out because there's no budget. No budget in Illinois is affecting so many things. It's now affecting police training. So people are downtown at this moment as I speak, protesting in front of the State of Illinois building that these guys, Rauner, Madigan, Cullerton, get up off their asses and dig this state out of the mess that these guys themselves put it in. So people are galvanizing against these people. And I just saw Michael Madigan on television. He was, I don't know what the hell he was. He's an old, craggly guy. Rich guy. He acts as though this is not, you know, this is not important. It's not that big of a deal. You're going into your 6 month without a budget. It is that big of a deal. And also, 2016 is an election year. A lot of these assholes who are in the Illinois legislature will find themselves out of a damn job because of this. And round. Okay, there says something about Governor Rauner. Yeah, but I don't. Everybody's voice is heard loud and clear, but these assholes aren't listening. They're pretending to listen. They're pretending to care, but they're pretending not to do their jobs. These students down there, and they're in the thousands, bitching because of the state has no budget. That's the way it should be. You got to jump in these people's asses to get things done, or things will not get done. And I got a feeling that the students aren't going to move these guys. Because, you know, they're going in their different directions saying, hey, you give me what I want, then you get what you want. The person said, no, we're not going to give you anything, so nothing gets done. And they have a meeting coming up, I believe, on the 18th or 19th of this month. The leaders, the lawmakers, the top lawmakers. And I'm already hearing that one of them, Bruce Rauner, is saying, I don't know, we can have the meeting, but nothing is going to get done. So why would you have a meeting? I'm not the only one in the media that's saying this. Why would you have a meeting? Everybody's waiting on this meeting, and you saying that there's nothing that's going to be done once this meeting is underway. Why have a meeting? But they're going to have a meeting, even though they know nothing's going to come of it. I'm just hoping taxpayer money is not involved for this great big waste of time. Before the meeting even gets underway, they're saying nothing is going to happen. These are the people who's going to be a part of the meeting. So why are you going to a meeting where there's nothing is going to happen? Same old, same old. Why are you doing this? It's a waste of time. You're not doing your job. They're not doing their job. So I am so glad to see people. People are out here protesting every day because of the budget. They hear, Rauner hears them. The legislature hears them. But that's all they do. They hear them. Rauner is trying to get people not to blame him. He's saying, don't blame me. Blame the legislature. Blame Madigan. Blame Cullerton. But we blame Rauner because Rauner is the governor. He's the governor of Illinois. So you blame him. He has to take the blame. He can't throw the blame. Because if it wasn't for Rauner being governor of Illinois, this would not be happening. This is Rauner's baby. He can pull this state out of the gutter in 5 or 10 minutes if he wanted to. But they dragging their asses and letting this state go under. And so many of the programs, needed programs, there's programs that have nothing to do with funding that aren't being met. There's money there, but it's not being released because of the budget. On certain social programs and other needed programs like the police training for new police. That money is drying up because of the budget. You can't play the lottery. If you do, you won't get, if you're a winner in the lottery, you will not get your winnings because of the budget. Daycare centers have already closed up. 6,000 or more kids have been kicked out on the street because of Rauner and layoffs, massive layoffs because of Rauner. And he's going to try and throw the blame. Give me a break. He can't. And if he tries, he just looks more stupider than what he already is. He has taken this state under. And even when there is a budget, getting this state back on track is going to take some time. It's going to take some time. There's a lot of agencies that are have closed their doors because of lack of funding. Once funding is restored, those programs are. It's going to take time to restore those programs that took years for them to restore in the first place before the funding was cut or reduced. So it's a mess in Illinois. And I'm trying to talk about Ben Carson, but I'm hearing things on the television in back of me about the protesting downtown, city of Chicago, against this stalemate or impasse or government shutdown because of no budget. And it's affecting the schools. It's affecting the students. It's affecting the teachers. This shit is affecting the entire state. It's affecting everybody who lives in Illinois. It's affecting me. It's affecting you. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, how rich you are, how poor you are. Without a budget in Illinois, it's affecting everybody. And for people to try to put their heads in the sand and say, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me. Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. Because it's giving Chicago and Illinois a bad name. We are the worst state. This is the worst state in the United States. We weren't like this before Rauner. This is Rauner's baby. This is Rauner's baby. This is Governor Bruce Rauner's baby, the governor of Illinois. He takes the blame for this. All right, we're waiting for Laura Holloman and her book, Unlocking Parental Intelligence. On the George Wilder Jr. Show, we're going to be talking about elder abuse on this show, too. And 347-857-1762. And I'm still I'm looking at my computer screen, and I'm still looking at Ben Carson. And a lot of us are just scratching our heads. How is this guy leading a pack? And there was one article where Ben Carson was quoted to calling the American people stupid. Yeah, he was calling us stupid. But I shot back and I said, hey, the only stupid people in America are the people who are voting and supporting Ben Carson. Those are the only stupid people in America, because you have to be crazy to support this insane guy with a pea of a brain. You have to be crazy to support this guy. And he's calling Americans stupid. There's nobody stupider than Ben Carson. I mean, if you follow this guy, if you listen to him, if you researched him, if you saw videos and archived videos of him or old time videos where he was a young doctor, how he has contradicted or just lied about what he's done. You know, he's selling a book. He's got a number one best selling book now, which is, some people are saying, is full of lies. And there's people out there, his minions, his flunkies, going around and saying, no, everything is true. How can everything be in that book be true when Ben Carson himself saying that he may have misspoke? So he's got people going out lying for him, and they're not doing a good job at it. Okay, the top pick as a backup candidate among the Tar Heels state Republican-leaning voters, with 15.1% saying he is their second choice. He should be their last choice. Second choice. I don't know how he got there anyway. When I first saw the first Republican debate, I think that was last month at some point, 2 months ago, the first one, and I saw Ben Carson standing on stage, and when it came for his time to speak, I said, no, this guy is going to be leading. He's going to be behind the pack. He's going to be behind the pack. I never, ever thought in my wildest dreams that he would wind up being a front runner. And in some cases, they were saying that if the election was held today, he would even beat Hillary Clinton. And a lot of us are saying, and other talk show hosts are saying, and callers are calling in saying, how could this be? My Facebook friends are saying also, how could this be? This guy is out of the Twilight Zone or somewhere. he's out in the Twilight Zone. And a lot of people are saying, a lot of other talk show hosts and the callers to their shows are saying that he represents the entire Republican field. It's possible, but Trump is coming out criticizing him after a while, before Trump was kind of cuddling him, you know, but now he's criticizing him. And a lot of them are going to be criticizing him because of the lies. I mean, the blatant lies. I mean, if you saw Ben Carson, if you saw him, and if you've heard him, he looks like he's on something, Valium or something. He looks like he's, because he always looks like he's sleeping. A lot of people say they like him because he's an outsider, but then you got some people who say they like the guy because he's soft-spoken. He's not your regular politician. But anytime you lie to the people, that disqualifies you right there. But some people are so gullible that they're trying to look over his lies and trying to defend them while still supporting him. That's ridiculous. That is totally ridiculous, because I've just supporting him, voting for him and putting him over the top. They are the stupid ones. And Ben Carson's calling the rest of us stupid. I mean, this is a quote from him. And this is something he shouldn't have said. Because this guy, Ben Carson, this guy knows nothing whatsoever about government. He knows nothing about government at all. And I'm serious. I mean, if you followed him, if you are somewhat into politics, if you're somewhat into the presidential 2016 election, and you're following these guys, the Republicans, you would know that Ben Carson is not the guy. You know, people, I've said yesterday on the show that maybe people are voting for this guy because they're just sick and tired of the other candidates. Yeah, that could be it. And they go on with somebody who has a long shot, who couldn't win, but now there's a possibility of him winning the nomination for president of the United States. Since he's being, you know, he's got these high polling numbers, the media is out there digging into his background. Because we don't know Ben Carson. We don't know anything about him. Who is this guy that's leading the pack for president of the United States? We don't know him. So the media saying the same thing. We don't know this guy. So they start digging into his background. And they come up with a bunch of lies. But you don't have to dig into Ben Carson's background to come up with lies. You just listen to him. Yeah. You just listen to him, and he's talking all over the place. He's contradicting himself, saying that he didn't say things when he did say them, because there's proof, there's video out there, there's things, it's written down, something that he written, and now he's saying that he didn't. Then he goes back, and when you catch him in one of his lies, he'll probably say, "I didn't mean to say it that way. I didn't know I said it," or whatever. He's not qualified to be president. He is not qualified to be president. Wow. And Donald Trump is criticizing him. I guess the next GOP debate, they are really going to be getting in this guy's ass. I almost feel sorry for the guy. You make you want to go up there and take up for him. But, you know, he's a big boy. He's running for the top office of the United States, and he should be scrutinized. They should dig into his background, because we know nothing of Ben Carson. The only thing we know of Ben Carson is that he's running for president. I don't think he was one of the Republican candidates who were complaining about the questioning of the debate in the third debate. I'm not sure. But I do know one thing. Ben Carson is quiet. And I do know that Ben Carson he's very, very shocked at his popularity. You can see it when he's signing his books or walking through the bookstore or giving speeches. He is very, very shocked and amazed that he's the front runner, that people have put him out there. But I do think after these revelations, these new revelations of him fibbing and telling and lies and just plumb old fabricating, I believe his poll numbers are going to go down and Donald Trump is going to overtake him. He's going to overtake him. But even if he gets overtaken by Donald Trump, he had a great ride, you know. And let's say if Ben Carson does lose this, if he loses it, he's going to still be making all the money in the world. Fox News are going to hire him, give him $1 million an hour paid job. He's going to have book tours, sell 1 million books again. He's going to be on television. He's going to be invited to colleges and universities to give speeches, and he's going to be able to collect fees that he dictates and that he wants and how much he wants. So Ben Carson is in a pretty good place. He might make more money than he ever would have not being president, as he would if he became president. So this guy, he is in a pretty good spot. He really is. But I'm going to say this again. He is not qualified to be president. I am overwhelmed. I am shocked. I am begasted. So are a lot of other people. I mean, a lot of other people. We are totally wondering how this guy got this far. Because he clearly is not qualified. He's clearly unfit. But somehow he's outrunning the pack. He's outrunning the pack. But I do think, like I said, these revelations about him lying, and it's the truth. I think this is going to take him down a notch, if not all the way. Okay, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. We're going to be right back, and we're talking about Ben Carson, but we're going to move on to something else as soon as we come back. As soon as I come back, stay with me. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for archiving the show. Thank you for downloading the show. Thank you for tuning in and listening. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting out of Chicago, live, 347-857-1762 is the number. Call in, ask a question, comment, or just sit back and listen. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show out of Illinois. So let's see what the time is. It's 627. I believe it's about 43, 44 degrees outside or something like that. I'm sitting here in my studio. Got two computers in front of me. So it's great. It's wonderful. Okay, we just got through talking about Ben Carson. We might as well move on and move on. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's see what we got here. Caller, you on the air? George Wilder Jr. Show. Go ahead. You there? Caller, you there? Hello? Are you there? Are you there? Can't hear you. All right, you have to get it together. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Hello? 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 Okay, hang on. Get it together. I'll be right back, all right? Okay. This is George Wilder Jr., George Wilder Jr. We're going to be talking about elder abuse. We're going to be talking about that on the show. I am actually looking for Laura Holloman to talk about her book, Unlocking Parental Intelligence. Yeah, I have a lot of things to talk about. I was wondering if this was her on the phone, but apparently not. Caller, you're still on the air. Anytime you want to jump in and tell us who you are, make a comment, you are. I got a feeling this is Laura, but I'm not sure. Okay. Laura? Okay, Laura. Let's see. Okay, let's just do this. All right. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Let's take another break. Okay, we've been talking about politics here, and I am looking for Laura Holloman. We did have a caller. I wasn't sure if that was her or not because no one mentioned or said anything. So what we're going to do, let's see, we're going to take a little break. And if we can find a, okay, I don't want to do the same clip. And drum roll. Okay. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. That's something, right? All right, be right back. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right. All right. Thank you so much. Let's go to the phones. Hello, caller. You're on the air. You there? Hello?
Hi, George. This is Nancy.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nancy.
Yeah, about human trafficking.
Oh, okay. I didn't. I tried before. You weren't getting in.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody said thank you for calling Blog Talk Radio and then hung up. So I tried again.
It might have been me because I didn't hear your voice. And
okay, all right.
Okay.
Anyway, here we are.
Yeah, let me grab some material. Okay. All righty. Okay. Nancy Hartwell, how could I be so unprepared? Start talking. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, well, for many years I have been an activist against human trafficking, especially the modern-day slave trade. Yes, it still exists. In fact, it is a multi-billion dollar flourishing industry, mostly controlled by organized crime. Hundreds and hundreds of girls are stolen, kidnapped every year and shipped to the Persian Gulf to stock brothels and harems. And I think it's absolutely outrageous. And so I am doing whatever I can to educate people about the problem that still does exist and also how they can help protect their young people against this horrendous crime.
This is a great topic because I am a total advocate of young girls. I mean, I've seen young girls as young as grade school. I mean, I'm talking about a grammar school, drop out of school and become caught up in this epidemic of sex trafficking. And I thought it was appalling that some girls, I even written about it, a fictional story that I written about. I try to put myself in the place of one of these young girls who are kidnapped or who are led into a life of ruining their lives. So this is a great topic, and you know I have lots of questions on it myself. But let me see. Nancy Hartwell has studied the topic of human trafficking for more than how many years?
More than 40 years.
Wow, so then you should be a very good expert on it. So,
well, I've had more than 400 radio interviews. So,
okay, all right. So what exactly is human trafficking?
Okay, this is the modern form of slavery. There are two major kinds of human trafficking. There is the kind where a girl is outright kidnapped, or even sometimes boys, about 15% of the victims of this crime are boys or young men, and then are simply treated like a piece of meat and sold to stock harems and brothels. The other form of human trafficking is a little bit softer, but no less brutal. And that is where a girl is tricked and trapped into becoming a prostitute under the control of a pimp. Sometimes
yeah.
Pimps will spend weeks buttering a girl up and setting her up. Sometimes they give them lavish gifts. Sometimes they say, oh, I know your parents don't understand you, but I do. I'll always be there for you. They know all the right buttons to push. Anybody
yeah,
out
yeah.
there know a 15-year-old girl who's not getting along with her parents? Hello. Somebody's figured out how to take advantage of this. There are people lurking on the internet who will set up ads promising, you know, glamorous jobs as models or a bit part in a movie or something like that.
Yeah.
Then when the girl shows up, they overpower them and cut off all avenues of escape, and they become a statistic.
Do you think that once a girl is caught up into all of what you just got through talking about, do you think there's a chance of this girl may turn her life around, or just accept what she's into?
Well, it's really hard, because these are girls who are lured into this at an extremely impressionable age, often 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
They're severely abused at home. So yeah, they run away, or they're looking, they just say, I can't tolerate this another minute. So they're very vulnerable. And pimps can spot this at 50 paces, and they know all the right buttons to push. And so they get a girl physically, financially, emotionally dependent on them, and then they move in for the kill. Okay, you know, sweetheart, well, you really owe me a favor now. And it's not just a question of being beaten up all the time, which is usually the case, but sometimes it's much more subtle. Nevertheless, it is still a total control over these poor girls. And I used to work with a guy in Baltimore who ran a shelter for girls that had been rescued from the streets. And he said it is so difficult because they have been betrayed so many times that they no longer trust anybody. And so there they are in a shelter where people are genuinely looking out after their best interests, and some of them are so suspicious that they run away and go back to the streets, even though they hate it, it's all they know. So it's very difficult. Most of the time, the girls learn how to cope, but they never really get over all of this systematic abuse. It's very difficult, George.
So in some cases, their lives will never be the same.
They will never be the same. Look, this isn't like somebody stealing your wallet that can really mess you up for a few weeks. This is somebody basically stealing you.
Yeah.
And they are stealing your dreams. They're stealing the rest of your life. And it is very difficult to recover completely. Like John used to say, they learn how to cope, but they never completely recover.
So how do parents protect their child from becoming a part of something like this, sex trafficking?
That is a great question. First of all, parents, please monitor your kids' social media sites. You don't want to be the big bad policeman and set off World War III. So the best way to do it is to do it with your kids so that you can turn it into an educational experience and point out ways what to look for. For example, pictures never should have been posted on the internet, or postings that have a whole bunch of red flags that even a very savvy 12-year-old might not pick up on. So do stay on top of the social media sites and warn the kids, especially if they say, oh, now keep this a big surprise, you know, keep it a secret. Your parents will be so surprised when they find out that you're going to be in a movie. If somebody says keep it a secret, that is a red flag the size of Brazil, okay? Also, for small children in particular, have a family password. Sometimes traffickers will go to schools and they'll find a kid, and especially if they have like a baseball cap that says Billy on the baseball cap, they know the kid's name is Billy, okay?
Yeah.
So, Billy, your mom can't come and pick you up today, so she sent me. Well, what's the password? And if the guy doesn't know the password, you know the kid will know not to go with him. Now, parents think that they have done a really good job of driving the point home. Don't talk to strangers. I saw on the internet a few days ago where there was this guy who went to a playground with a dog, And he went to the parents who were right there and said, have you told your kids not to talk to strangers? And the parents said, oh, yes. Do you think your kid has gotten the message? Oh, absolutely. He said, okay, which one is your kid? So the parent points to a little girl over there, maybe 7 years mm-hmm. old. So he goes over to the girl with his dog. And he says, do you like dogs? And she says, oh, yeah, I love dogs. Do you want to pet my dog? Okay, sure. Do you want to see more puppies? I have a lot more puppies at home. And she'll say yes and hold his hand and go skipping off with him with a big smile. 100% of the children that he approached with his dog went with him willingly, even though he was a stranger. 100%. Parents couldn't believe it. So even if a guy has a dog, it doesn't make him a nice person.
No,
sometimes
no,
they even,
it doesn't.
Yeah. Sometimes they even work in pairs.
Yeah.
One of them will set up a problem, and then the other one will come in and heroically solve it. Have you ever told your kids not to talk to heroes? What they're trying to do is break the stranger barrier. For example, one guy will grope a girl and she'll get mad. And then this other guy will come in, step in and rescue her. Well, it's all a setup. They've been working together.
Yeah.
So you have to warn your kids about this. A lot of parents don't think that this is still a real problem. If they say, why are we still talking about this? We dealt with that ages ago. Guess what,
no.
folks? It is still a huge problem. And if we do the ostrich thing, we're putting our kids at risk.
How much do you blame parents for the situation that their kids might be in? In terms
of blame doesn't really serve any purpose, George. There are a lot of parents who are, you know, the helicopter parents that are so involved in everything their kids do that, you know, you wonder how a kid ever even goes to the bathroom by himself. But others are kind of hands off. The hands off parents that are putting their kids a little bit more at risk. You really need to be aware of what your kids are doing, especially on the internet. There are people lurking on the internet, especially, you know, these online games.
Yeah.
Where they'll pretend like they're another 11-year-old.
And then
they start saying, hey, can you send me a picture of yourself without any clothes on? Excuse me?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of people on Facebook and other social networking sites. They're not who they say they are. The pictures are not
Precisely.
Who they are. The pictures are not who they are. So you really have to be careful because that's probably where most of this stuff happens, like sites like Craigslist. I've heard a lot about that, where
There's also a site called Backpage.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yes, there are lots of sites these days, and they come up and they go down when you know law enforcement discovers them. A lot of child pornography sites. But it's a very big problem, and if we shield our children from it. We're not doing them any favor because they are then very naive when it comes to what these traffickers want and how they operate.
See, I have a young kid. I have a young son. I don't think he's into that. But a lot of times you cannot actually – I mean, when your child is on social media, and if you're a very busy parent, you can't really watch everything that they're doing on social media.
But – every now and then you can sit down with them and give
them
one of these, right, give them one of these, you know, just an educational experience. I have a young relative. She's 17 years old, really cute, falls in love with a different guy on the internet every other week, and she had never heard the term human trafficking. we sat down and had a little chat. And she said, really? I said, uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you really need to tell kids what the risks are. And you can even tell them, look, you wouldn't fall for this, you can tell them. But, you know, you've got some friends who are really naive, so you should tell them, you know, what these techniques are so that they will be aware of it, so your naive friends won't fall for it.
Do you think that people who are caught up in, young girls who are caught up in human trafficking, do you think at some point they will start to just like what they're doing?
Well, occasionally, yes. But most of the time, they think that a girl who has been trafficked, her life expectancy becomes about 6 years. So if she's trafficked, say, at age 13 or 14, by the time she's 20, chances are that she will be dead. Either through overdoses of drugs, because pimps often get the girls in their, quote, stable, unquote, on drugs because it's another way of controlling them, or they'll be brutalized by a pimp or by a customer. How many jobs do you know where your life is put at risk every time you go to work? It is not a very safe way to make a living, and I guess
no, it's not.
There are probably some girls out there who decide that they like it, but most of them are scared to death and are simply forced into it and then forced to keep doing it regardless of their own opinions. It's simply a question of complete control over very vulnerable, very impressionable children who are hurting and they need help, and instead of getting help, they're preyed upon.
How do you think we should solve the problem of human trafficking if there is a such thing as trying to solve it, eradicate it? But, you know, prostitution has been here since the beginning of time, so it's...
Yes, and so has theft and robbery and break-ins and everything else. I mean, we can try to control it, but we probably aren't going to eliminate it altogether. Number one thing that we can do, I think, is to educate the public. Number two, we need to improve our legal structure. There's an organization called Polaris, Human Trafficking, and they rate every state in the union on its legal environment about human trafficking. Most of the time, states still blame the victims.
Yeah.
You're arrested for being a prostitute. Even though, you ran away from home when you were 13, a pimp picks you up and forces you into prostitution, and then we treat you like a criminal. Hello. There is only one state in the union that gets an A rating from Polaris, and that, believe it or not, is the state of Tennessee. Most states get C's and D's. So we can, number one, improve the legal environment. Number two, there are lots of organizations nationwide and locally. Very often they're associated with religious or community groups like Kiwanis or Rotary, something like that, that try to help girls who have been victims of this crime. They always need financial support. They always need volunteers to help. And if you are interested in this problem, offering some financial support or some volunteer time, they would be so grateful. Also, if you are aware of a young person who is planning to run away from home, please help them find some other solution because they are at extreme risk.
Wow. Okay, Nancy Hartwell, where can we find your books on this?
Okay, my books are available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the flagship book is also available through my own website, nancyjhartwell.com. I'm pleased to say that the flagship book called Flave reached number 7 in all fiction on Amazon. That's
congratulations.
Almost 3 million titles. And it also has won an award. Now, it is a book about a sex slave.
Mm-hmm.
It has a few places in it that are pretty raw. If you're expecting pornography, you're going to be disappointed, but you need to be prepared for some pretty raw descriptions. Number one rule of writing a book is show, don't tell. So there are some places in it that are not for consumption for six-year-olds.
yeah, I understand. I'm pretty sure my audience understands.
Right.
So you have written 3 books.
Yes, sir. Harem Slave is the first one.
Okay.
And then the second one, a sequel, is called Prince Ibrahim's Favorite. And then the third one, it's a companion volume. It's not really a novel. It's 111 individual stories of 111 girls who wound up in the same royal harem. Their stories about how they were abducted, where they were before, how they're trying to cope with being closed up behind harem walls. And it's called Voices from the Harem.
Yeah, I'm going to be going to the Amazon page, and I'm going to check out those books. And because, I mean, this is something that your books are something and that I think America needs, because sex trafficking is happening every day. It's all around us. You know, vulnerable kids, vulnerable young ladies are being thrown in this situation. I've seen it. I've seen it in my neighborhoods. I've seen it walking down the street. And sometimes you can tell a young lady is being sex trafficked and you don't even know her. There are so many times I've seen young ladies with guys, and the guys totally are abusing them, the way they are holding the girl. Sometimes they'll grab her by her neck and push her down the street, and she's silently crying inside, and you just want to help them so badly. Because
well,
you know
remember
that
you're absolutely right, George, and you remember the case recently in Cleveland where this guy had locked up these 3 girls for more than 10 years.
Yeah, I remember.
Right under everybody's nose. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there are a couple signs you can look for. If you see locks on the outside of doors, that's to keep somebody in and not to keep bad guys out. Mm-hmm. Also, if somebody has masked the windows with aluminum foil or opaque plastic or something, they have something in there that they are seriously trying to hide from public view.
Uh-huh.
And if you notice something like that, you should alert the authorities and let them investigate. Don't try to investigate all of this yourself. But if you see something suspicious, write down the time, write down the date. If you can't take pictures, very discreetly, and then turn everything over to the authorities so that they can follow through.
Nancy Hartwell, thank you for being on the show. You have enlightened me. You have enlightened our audience. You were super.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate, George, the opportunity to help get the word out.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye. That was Nancy Hartwell on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about sex trafficking. I will be back, take a break, and we'll come right back. Stay with me. Stay with me. Once again, I want to thank Dr. Nancy Hartwell for being on the show discussing human trafficking. Okay, this is George Wilder of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, we will be right back. Hey friends and fans, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. You know, it costs a lot to keep this show airing. It takes time, preparation, and dedication, and most of all, it takes revenue. If you would like to donate to keep this show on the air each and every day, just about, go to www.georgewilderjr.com. That's www.georgewilderjr.com to help keep this important show on the air. Donate for a good cause. The cause of this show, my show, your show. This is the talk of our times. Thank you very much. All right. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and you are listening to me right now.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Okay, I want to say a little bit of something about elder abuse. I told myself I'm going to do a show on it, on elder abuse, because that, just like human trafficking, human sex trafficking, elder abuse in the United States is rampant. Old people get beat up, mistreated by younger people. And sometimes these young people are in our family. They're our family, abusing and misusing for what? Money. It could be money. It could be anything. Some people like to beat up on, physically abuse old people just because what? They're old. So I'm going to be doing a show on this. I'm going to research the topic because I want to be thorough. And I want to do something on elder abuse because we're all going to be super old one day. Do we want to be beaten up, abused, or scammed? We have to try to protect ourselves as older Americans. Because like I've said so many times, I've seen so many people abused by younger people. Younger people who don't even think you're noticing them. Because we're all going to be super old, and we don't want our young people, even if they're a part of the family, to abuse us. You know, it happens. It happens. It happens in nursing homes. But I think a lot of the nursing homes are cleaning up their act. Most old people do not want to go to a nursing home, even if their child puts them in the nursing home. Most of them don't want. They want to stay in their own home, which is cool, which is great. However, this older person is living alone and they can't take care of themselves. They lost a lot of bone and cartilage. They can't stand up. They can't walk. Well, and you are working and you got your own life. You know, then there's no other recourse but to, you know, put them in the nursing home. But you want to put them in a great nursing home. You don't want to put them in a nursing home where there's been mountains of abuse. So before you put your loved one in a nursing home, make sure you research that nursing home. Because there's so many people who are abused in those nursing homes. especially at night when there's no other staff around. There might be two or three people working, and it's 1 or 2 o'clock at night. There's no other staff, and all of a sudden this person who works there, a nurse or whoever, decides they want to go in the room and just beat up on an elderly person. That, but you know what? That's a damn shame. 300-pound nurse walks into a room at a nursing home where an elderly person is 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and just start beating on that elderly person or misusing or abusing that elderly person because they can. And you don't see a thing because you're not there. I mean, you get there to visit your parents, they're going to tell you, oh, she's lovely, she's wonderful. Never will tell you that they abused your grandmother or your great-grandmother. And you trust these people to give your loved one the greatest service in the world, and you're thinking that. But all the time that you're thinking that, your loved one is getting abused. So I'm going to do something. I'm going to do a show on elder abuse because I think it's so important. It is so important. I'm pretty sure we all know someone who is over 55, over 60, over 70, over 80, over 90 that could be victims of abuse. And we don't know it's happening, but it is happening. Just like sex trafficking, you know, just like sex. And she's right. There are so many women, young girls, 12, 13, 14, 15, who are recruited into sex trafficking against their will. And once they get into that, their life is just gone because it's all they know. And once they start being abused, some girls, some young ladies invite physically abusiveness on themselves because they were abused by their father, by their mother when they were young, and they grew up being accustomed to being abused. So they go out there and get them an abused boyfriend because they're accustomed to being abused because their mother whipped and spanked them, their father whipped and spanked them when they did wrong. So they go out and get a boyfriend to whip and spank them and beat them when they're wrong. And they, you know, love his dirty draws. And that's just, if you think about it, it's a waste of potential. It's a waste of talent. Because young girls out here, the guys, the pimps, they are, when they're looking for girls, they are looking for the weak-minded. Some girls who are gullible, who are weak-minded, who are very nice, who are very giving. And once they obtain these young ladies by lying and threatening and being mean to them, they start putting these girls out on the street. I mean, Nancy Hartwell, she is an expert. She knows what she's talking about. I love having people on this show who knows what they're talking about. Because if they know what they're talking about, I'm going to learn something. Hey, and you are going to learn something. Okay, let me play this clip on elder abuse. And we're going to sit back and listen to it because this is very, very important. I'm going to play the same clip once I set up a show in the near future on this topic, on this vital topic of elder abuse in America. All right, here we go.
My name is Carol Howell, and I'm with UC Davis Center for Healthy Aging, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Mosqueda. She is the Chief of Geriatrics at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and she's a professor of family medicine and holds the Ronald W. Reagan Endowed Chair in Geriatrics. She sees patients at the UC Irvine Senior Health Center and participates in research and education as well. And her topic today is on elder abuse. Thank you. Thanks, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this important topic of elder abuse. It's going to be a challenging topic, though. This is something that we don't talk about very often, and I think we really need to start challenging everybody in our society to think about this issue of elder abuse and understand it a little bit more. It's challenging in a number of different ways. I want people to imagine what it's like in terms of what elder abuse really is, to really ponder what it means to people, to take it beyond just the fact that, oh, that's a real shame that this occurs in our society, but to understand it as the trauma it really is to the people who are directly affected by it and everybody who loves them. I want you to acknowledge that this really exists, and I'm going to prove it to you as we talk today. And I want you to believe two things. I want you to believe that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be a perpetrator. And this, I think, is particularly challenging for us to really understand and take in. Well, what do we mean when we talk about elder abuse? There are a variety of categories of elder abuse as defined in state law in California, and I have them listed here on the screen: physical, sexual, financial abuse, neglect by other people towards somebody, neglecting yourself, issues of abandonment and abduction where people are actually taken across state lines, and psychological abuse. All of these types of abuse that I've just mentioned are reportable abuse. In other words, we are required, many of us, to report these to the state if we have a suspicion, although psychological abuse or emotional abuse is an optional report. We're going to focus in on the topic of physical abuse, neglect, and some issues related to sexual abuse as well. I'm going to go through a few examples, and unfortunately I have to tell you that these examples are based on real cases that I have been involved in. Here's an example of financial abuse. A 55-year-old woman who threatens her mother, if you don't sign on the dotted line to pay for my car, you're going to go into a nursing home. Another example, a 30-year-old man who befriends a widow. She's lonely, she's depressed, she lost her husband less than a year ago. And what people who are sort of predators will often do is find a hole, a gap, an emotional need somebody has, and fill that. And what does he do? He obtains the password for her ATM card and offers to help her buy groceries. And then he also helps himself to cash so that he has some for his own spending to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over a period of a year. Examples of physical abuse: pulling somebody's hair, in fact, dragging somebody by their hair across a carpet, throwing food or objects at somebody, denying access to pain medication, slapping, hitting, punching. A recent case I'm involved in involves a 16-year-old girl who was punching her grandmother in the face. These are the sad realities of what's going on. One of the more hidden types of abuse that I'd like to bring to your attention has to do with neglect. And before I give you some examples of neglect, I think it deserves a little bit of an explanation. When we talk about neglect, we're talking about a relationship, somebody who has assumed responsibility or care and custody for another individual who's unable to care for themselves. And when this person who has assumed this responsibility does not provide appropriate care, such as basics, food, clothing, and shelter, medical care, making sure the person's hygiene is reasonably taken care of, looking after things like health and safety hazards, when these things are not attended to in a reasonable way, we call this neglect. Here are some of the examples that I've seen. People who are lying in urine and feces, and I don't just mean a dirty diaper for a few minutes here or there. I mean people who are lying in their own urine and feces for hours, days, weeks at a time. People who have very elongated, filthy nails, matted hair, living in filthy conditions. People who are not fed or given fluids and they become malnourished and dehydrated. It's not good enough for somebody who's unable to get around to just leave some food at the bedside if they can't reach for it and feed themselves. People who develop deep open wounds that we call pressure sores, sometimes all the way down to their bones, because no one has repositioned them and they're unable to move on their own. These are some examples of neglect that we see. Well, how common is this problem of elder abuse? It's a great, great question, but it's a very hard one to answer. As you can imagine, it's hard to just knock on somebody's door and say, is anybody abusing grandma? So the question then becomes, how do we figure out how common a problem it is?
we also need to understand that there are some difficulties in establishing abuse related to people's reluctance to even admit it's occurring. Not only can we not knock on the door to ask if anybody's abusing grandma, but grandma might not want to tell us if there's abuse going on. She might be ashamed that her own grandson is doing this to her. Many older adults fear losing their independence and, in fact, would rather remain at home in an abusive situation than go to a facility such as a nursing home. Again, a very sad reality. And unlike children, older adults can just sort of fade quietly away in our society and nobody thinks about it. Nobody questions it. With kids, if they don't show up at school, we wonder what has happened to them. But we're very accepting of older adults sort of disappearing, oh, they got sick and you never see them again. So it's hard to know really what's going on sometimes. People who are being abused might be so incapacitated physically, cognitively, emotionally, that they're unable to even report that they're being abused. So people might be too incapacitated to report, but the other thing that sometimes occur is that signs of abuse may be missed or mistaken for usual aging. After all, it's pretty common to have bruises as we get older. It's not uncommon to have a hip fracture, and so it can be really difficult to tell whether or not some of these injuries were a result of abuse or just something that happened by mistake. So I'm going to give you our best guess or guesstimate in terms of how common abuse is, but we also want to recognize that it probably is an underestimate. The best study we have so far is called the National Elder Abuse Incident Study, published 10 years ago now, 1998, where there was some attempt to quantify the problem. And this is what they found, is that in a one-year period, there were 236,000 reports of seniors abused at home and 50,000 reports of abuse in nursing homes. I want you to really pay attention to this because one of the common myths is that abuse occurs in nursing homes and it's really not an issue in society, when the reality is that the vast majority of abuse occurs in private homes and the most common perpetrator is a family member.
Hmm.
What did they learn?
Wow.
Well, not only do you have 236,000 reports of abuse in the community, 50,000 in nursing homes, but for every report of abuse, at least five, some people think maybe triple that, go unreported. So when you look at the numbers, you're talking about at least a million older adults in 1998 victims of abuse. This is a big problem. So what happens now when we start projecting out in terms of numbers of older adults who live in the United States? And let's take a look at a graph for just a moment to examine this issue. You can see that the number of people over the age of 65, of course, is rising at a very, very rapid rate. One of the wonderful things now is that our life expectancies have gone up in a very dramatic fashion in just the past 100 years. But pay attention in particular to this red line, people who are 85 and over. They are the most rapidly growing segment of our society in the United States. Their numbers of people over the age of 85 are growing at an exponential rate. Look at the way the number takes off after the year 2030, and that's not very far off. Why do we have a special category for elders? I mean, in California, the law is that after the age of 65 is when we call something elder abuse. Does that mean it's okay to abuse somebody when they're 64 and then on their birthday at 65 it becomes criminal? Well, the reason we really talk about this special category for elders is that as we grow older, we do become more vulnerable to mistreatment. And so it just becomes a practical matter to have kind of an age cutoff for it, which I think is a reasonable way to go. What are some of these vulnerabilities? Well, as we grow older, it might be harder to defend ourselves from being abused. It might be harder to defend yourself from somebody coming at you with a blow. So it might be harder physically to defend yourself. And certainly emotionally, it might be harder to defend yourself against some of the verbal attacks that can be landed at you. You also may be more dependent on others than you have in the past. We're all used to and enjoy being fairly independent creatures. And now if we begin to have some difficulty and we need help with very personal things like dressing, like grooming, like hygiene, all of a sudden there are more people involved in your life, more hands touching you, and again, vulnerabilities increase. There's also this fear that we talked about a few minutes ago, fear of losing your independence if a report is made. So now somebody might really be able to threaten you, sign over the house or I won't let you live in your own home anymore to help you stay in your own home. You'll have to go into a nursing home. Older adults are very susceptible to these sorts of threats, and that's quite easy to imagine. I want to spend just a moment talking to you about dementia as a special issue. I certainly have observed time and time again that people with dementia are particularly vulnerable to elder abuse. Alzheimer's disease, of course, is the most common type of dementia, and we need to recall that dementia is not just memory loss, but loss of other cognitive functions, so that people with a dementia certainly have short-term memory loss, but also have problems with things like judgment, reasoning, insight, language, difficulty comprehending things. And so you can imagine, as people go through different stages of dementia, their risk of abuse also can be quite high. So in the early stages, when you're having memory trouble and difficulty comprehending things, people might have you sign on the dotted line, and you might lose thousands of dollars. You might lose your house, other sorts of financial abuse that occurs. As people then move through the different stages of dementia and in the very end stage be very dependent, they may end up suffering from some very severe neglect. Dementia gets much more common as we grow older. So if you look at everybody over the age of 65, about 3 to 5% of people have a dementing illness. But past the age of 85, you're probably dealing with close to half of our population with dementia. And remember back to that slide we looked at a moment ago in terms of the growth of people over the age of 65, the growth of the number of people over the age of 85 in our society. People who have dementia may be unable to report abuse. You may no longer be able to use a telephone or know how to make a report. One thing that really scares me is we tend to really discount people who have dementing illnesses like Alzheimer's disease. So if a report is made, they're not believed. After all, they have a dementia. We really can't believe anything they say, and they get discounted. And people, particularly in the middle and later stages, may be unable to even recognize that they're being abused because they have such severe cognitive difficulties, they don't even comprehend the bad situation that they're in. Well, why is this happening? Why does elder abuse occur? And we don't really know the answer to this question, but I want to throw out a few possibilities for us to think about, and perhaps you can argue about them with some folks later on. Is it a mental illness problem, or is it a caregiver who has, say, a bipolar disorder, or has schizophrenia, or has some other sort of mental health problem that makes them unable to properly care for a loved one? Is it that we just live in a violent society, that now pushing and shoving and hitting people has become more commonplace, and this is now translating into older adults as well? Is it a sense of entitlement? I'm going to get that money anyway. I may as well get it sooner than later. Is it stress? Boy, I'm trying to take care of the kids. My husband wants dinner as soon as he gets home, and now I'm taking care of his mother, my mother-in-law, and I just can't handle all this, and she keeps asking me the same question over and over again, and finally I just can't take it, so I just feel stressed. Or is that an excuse? Is it, as many people in the domestic violence community talk to us, really an issue of power and control? And we certainly see domestic violence in late life. Is it an issue of ageism? Do we just not care about what happens to older adults in our society? Do we just feel that, well, they're old anyway, so it doesn't matter as much? This scares me, but I've heard people speak like this. It's not as important if an older adult gets abused and if a child gets abused because they're not going to live that much longer anyway. I think this is a horrible notion, and as a society, we need to confront that many of us carry these beliefs deep within us. So, some questions to ponder. What is our responsibility as family members? What is our responsibility as neighbors and friends? Are we ageist? Or do we have some concern about violating privacy? And we're always trying to balance these sorts of issues out. We don't want Big Brother watching after us. On the other hand, if we have a concern about a neighbor or a friend who we haven't seen, what is our responsibility to check in and make sure that they're okay, that they're not being isolated and kept in a back room, and that nobody's allowing phone calls to come in? I don't have answers. Right now I have questions that I'd like people to think about. What is our responsibility as a society? Are there laws that need to be enacted, or are there laws that are barriers right now to doing a good job in terms of care for older adults who are vulnerable? What role could the government play? What role should the government play? There's precious little funding right now that goes into research related to elder abuse, particularly when you compare the numbers of dollars that go into child abuse research, domestic violence research. Why is that? And who is the voice of these vulnerable elders to speak up to say, we need to do something more? What policies do we have in place right now that either allow or prevent elder abuse from occurring? So, for example, we have mandated reporting laws, and we now ask that the clergy make reports if they have a reasonable suspicion of elder abuse. Many of us fear making these sorts of reports. We fear that some sort of SWAT team is going to roll in and grab Granny out of the house, when in fact that's very far from the truth. What we have are agencies through the government called Adult Protective Services, who I think are some of the unsung heroes in our society, who will go to the...
All right, just some of the talk on elder abuse. Just some of it. George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live. I'm in my studio. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's 7:27 straight up Chicago time. I want to thank my guest, Nancy Hartwell. She really provided some insight on sex trafficking, something that I have been an advocate on, as well as domestic abuse. So she knows her stuff. She really knows her stuff. And she may be back on the show sometime in the future, because I just love having people on the show, especially authors and writers, who give something to my audience and, most importantly, give something to me. We learn something. And that's what it's all about, is learning something, because you're never, ever too old to learn. Never, ever too old to learn. I don't care if you're 110. You're never to learn something new, because the world, this world is ever changing. It's always changing, and we have to change with it, or we will be left behind. All right, George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, practically off the air. And for some reason, I'm thinking I had Lori Hallman and her book, Unlocking Parental Intelligence, on the show today, but maybe that's tomorrow. Somebody done messed up in the booking department. It wasn't me. Okay. All right. Okay, so this is practically off the air, but still in all, someone just whispered in my ear, 90 seconds, and we're going to talk some more about elderly abuse. I'm going to do a show on that, and it's been fun. It's been great. I love doing the show. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm going to probably change my hours, as I've said before, but this is super. I love doing this show, especially when I got guests on the show. 347-857-1762. Book that number. Call in tomorrow. Or sit back and just relax and enjoy the show. That's what it's all about. Because most people are doing that. They're sitting back and enjoying and listening to George. They may not agree with me all the time, but they find it exciting just to listen. And that's great. That's wonderful. And we're going to sign off right now. I'm going to sign off with this little ditty I cooked up. And so I hope to see you guys tomorrow, or, you know, on the show, hopefully. Okay. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show signing off. See you, everybody. Thank you for being there. Bye-bye.